Chapter 46. Might sooner than wrestle hard to direct them. Klim then went into the garden, and a thoughtful languor stole over Eustacia for the remainder of the afternoon, which her husband attributed to the heat of the weather. In the evening he set out on the journey. Although the heat of summer was yet intense, the days had considerably shortened, and before he had advanced a mile on his way all the heath purples, browns, and greens had merged in a uniform dress without airiness or graduation, and broken only by touches of white, where the little heaps of clean quartz sand showed the entrance to a rabbit burrow, or where the white flints of a footpath lay like a thread over the slopes. In almost every one of the isolated and stunted thorns which grew here and there, a nighthawk revealed his presence, by whirring like the clack of a mill, as long as he could hold his breath, then stopping, flapping his wings, wheeling round the bush, alighting, and after a silent interval of listening beginning to whir again. At each brushing of Klim's feet, white miller moths flew into the air just high enough to catch upon their moldy wings the mellowed light from the west, which now shone across the depressions and levels of the ground without falling thereon to light them up. Eobright walked on amid this quiet scene with a hope that all would soon be well. 3 miles on he came to a spot where a soft perfume was wafted across his path, and he stood still for a moment to inhale the familiar scent. It was the place at which, 4 hours earlier, his mother had sat down exhausted on the knoll covered with shepherd's thyme. While he stood, a sound between a breathing and a moan suddenly reached his ears. He looked to where the sound came from, but nothing appeared there save the verge of the hillocks stretching against the sky in an unbroken line. He moved a few steps in that direction, and now he perceived a recumbent figure almost close to his feet. Among the different possibilities as to the person's individuality, there did not for a moment occur to Eobright that it might be one of his own family. Sometimes furze cutters had been known to sleep out of doors at these times, to save a long journey homeward and back again. But Klim remembered the moan and looked closer, and saw that the form was feminine, and a distress came over him like cold air from a cave. But he was not absolutely certain that the woman was his mother till he stooped and beheld her face, pallid, and with closed eyes. His breath went, as it were, out of his body, and the cry of anguish which would have escaped him died upon his lips. During the momentary interval that elapsed before he became conscious that something must be done, all sense of time and place left him, and it seemed as if he and his mother were as when he was a child with her many years ago on this heath at hours similar to the present. Then he awoke to activity, and bending yet lower he found that she still breathed, and that her breath, though feeble, was regular, except when disturbed by an occasional gasp. "Oh, what is it? Mother, are you very ill? You are not dying?" he cried, pressing his lips to her face. "Amir Klim, how did you come here? What does it all mean?" At that moment the chasm in their lives which his love for Eustacia had caused was not remembered by Eobright, and to him the present joined continuously with that friendly past that had been their experience before the division. She moved her lips, appeared to know him, but could not speak, and then Klim strove to consider how best to move her, as it would be necessary to get her away from the spot before the dews were intense. He was able-bodied, and his mother was thin. He clasped his arms round her, lifted her a little, and said, "Does that hurt you?" She shook her head, and he lifted her up, then, at a slow pace, went onward with his load. The air was now completely cool, but whenever he passed over a sandy patch of ground uncarpeted with vegetation, there was reflected from its surface into his face the heat which it had imbibed during the day. At the beginning of his undertaking he had thought but little of the distance which yet would have to be traversed before Bloom's End could be reached, but though he had slept that afternoon he soon began to feel the weight of his burden. Thus he proceeded, like Aeneas with his father, the bats circling round his head, nightjars flapping their wings within a yard of his face, and not a human being within call. While he was yet nearly a mile from the house, his mother exhibited signs of restlessness under the constraint of being borne along, as if his arms were irksome to her. He lowered her upon his knees and looked around. The point they had now reached, though far from any road, was not more than a mile from the Blooms End cottages occupied by Fairway, Sam, Humphrey, and the Cantles. Moreover, 50 yards off stood a hut, built of clods and covered with thin turves, but now entirely disused. The simple outline of the lonely shed was visible, and thither he determined to direct his steps. As soon as he arrived, he laid her down carefully by the entrance, and then ran, and cut with his pocket knife an armful of the driest fern. Spreading this within the shed, which was entirely open on one side, he placed his mother thereon. Then he ran with all his might towards the dwelling of Fairway. Nearly a quarter of an hour had passed, disturbed only by the broken breathing of the sufferer, when moving figures began to animate the line between heath and sky. In a few moments Clem arrived with Fairway, Humphrey, and Susan Nunsich. Ollie Dowden, who had chanced to be at Fairway's, Christian and Grantor Cantle following helter-skelter behind. They had brought a lantern and matches, water, a pillow, and a few other articles which had occurred to their minds in the hurry of the moment. Sam had been dispatched back again for brandy, and a boy brought Fairway's pony, upon which he rode off to the nearest medical man, with directions to call at Wildov's on his way, and inform Thomason that her aunt was unwell. Sam and the brandy soon arrived, and it was administered by the light of the lantern, after which she became sufficiently conscious to signify by signs that something was wrong with her foot. Ollie Dowden at length understood her meaning, and examined the foot indicated. It was swollen and red. Even as they watched, the red began to assume a more livid color, in the midst of which appeared a scarlet speck, smaller than a pea, and it was found to consist of a drop of blood, which rose above the smooth flesh of her ankle in a hemisphere. "I know what it is," cried Sam. "He has been stung by an adder." "Yes," said Clem instantly. "Remember when I was a child seeing just such a bite? Oh, my poor mother!" "It was my father who was bit," said Sam. "Andy, there's only one way to cure it. You must rub the place with the fat of other adders, and the only way to get that is by frying them. That's what they did for him." "'Tis an old remedy," said Clem distrustfully, "and I have doubts about it. But we can do nothing else till the doctor comes." "'Tis a sure cure," said Ollie Dowden, with emphasis. "I've used it when I used to go out nursing." "Then we must pray for daylight to catch them," said Clem gloomily. "I will see what I can do," said Sam. He took a green hazel which he had used as a walking stick, split it at the end, inserted a small pebble, and with the lantern in his hand went out into the heath. Clem had by this time lit a small fire, and dispatched Susan Nunsich for a frying pan. Before as he had returned, Sam came in with 3 adders, one briskly coiling and uncoiling in the cleft of the stick, and the other 2 hanging dead across it. "I have only been able to get one alive and fresh as he ought to be," said Sam. "These limp ones are 2 I killed today at work, but as they don't die till the sun goes down, they can't be very stale meat." The live adder regarded the assembled group with a sinister look in its small black eye, and the beautiful brown and jet pattern on its back seemed to intensify with indignation. Mrs. Eobright saw the creature, and the creature saw her. She quivered throughout, and averted her eyes. "Look at that," murmured Christian Cantle. "Egbers, how do we know, but that something of the old serpent in God's garden, that jite the apple to the young woman with no clothes, lives on in adders and snakes still? Look at his eye for all the world like a villainous sort of black currant. 'Tis to be hoped he can't ill wish us. There's folks in Heath who have been overlooked already. I will never kill another adder, as long as I live." "Well, 'tis right to be afeard of things, if folks can't help it," said Grantor Cantle. "'Twould have saved me many a brave danger in my time." "I fancy I heard something outside the shed," said Christian. I wish troubles would come in the daytime, for then a man could show his courage, and hardly beg for mercy of the most broomstick old woman he should see, if he was a brave man, and able to run out of her sight. Even such an ignorant fellow as I should know better than do that, said Sam. Well, there's calamities where we least expect it, whether or no. Neighbors, if Mrs. E. Albright were to die, do you think we should be took up and tried for the manslaughter of a woman? No, they couldn't bring it in as that, said Sam, unless they could prove we had been poachers at some time of our lives. But she'll fetch round. Now, if I had been stung by 10 adders I should hardly have lost a day's work for it, said Granfer Candle. Such is my spirit, when I am on my mettle. But perhaps 'tis natural in a man trained for war. Yes, I've gone through a good deal, but nothing ever came amiss to me, after I joined the locals in four. He shook his head and smiled at a mental picture of himself in uniform. I was always first in the most gallantest scrapes in my younger days. I suppose that was because they always used to put the biggest fool afore, said Fairway from the fire, beside which he knelt, blowing it with his breath. Do you think so, Timothy? Said Granfer Candle, coming forward to Fairway's side with sudden depression in his face. Then a man may feel for years that he is good solid company, and be wrong about himself after all? Never mind that question, Granfer. Stir your stumps, and get some more sticks. 'Tis very nonsense of an old man, to prattle so when life and death's in mangling. Yes, yes, said Granfer Candle, with melancholy conviction. Well, this is a bad night altogether for them that have done well in their time, and if I were ever such a dab at the hautboy or tenor viol, I shouldn't have the heart to play tunes upon them now. Susan now arrived with the frying pan, when the live adder was killed, and the heads of the three taken off. The remainders, being cut in two lengths and split open, were tossed into the pan, which began hissing and crackling over the fire. Soon a rill of clear oil trickled from the carcasses, whereupon Clem dipped the corner of his handkerchief into the liquid, and anointed the wound. Eustacia hears of good fortune, and beholds evil. In the meantime Eustacia, left alone in her cottage at Alderworth, had become considerably depressed by the posture of affairs. The consequences which might result from Clem's discovery, that his mother had been turned from his door, that day were likely to be disagreeable, and this was a quality in events which she hated as much as the dreadful. To be left to pass the evening by herself was irksome to her at any time, and this evening it was more irksome than usual by reason of the excitements of the past hours. The two visits had stirred her into restlessness. She was not wrought to any great pitch of uneasiness by the probability of appearing in an ill light in the discussion between Clem and his mother, but she was wrought to vexation, and her slumbering activities were quickened to the extent of wishing that S.E. had opened the door. S.E. had certainly believed that Clem was awake, and the excuse would be an honest one as far as it went, but nothing could save her from censure in refusing to answer at the first knock. Yet, instead of blaming herself for the issue, she laid the fault upon the shoulders of some indistinct, colossal prince of the world, who had framed her situation and ruled her lot. At this time of the year it was pleasanter to walk by night than by day, and when Clem had been absent about an hour she suddenly resolved to go out in the direction of Bloom's End, on the chance of meeting him on his return. When she reached the garden gate she heard wheels approaching, and looking round beheld her grandfather coming up in his car. I can't stay a minute, thank ye, he answered to her greeting. I'm driving to East Egdon, but I came round here just to tell you the news. Perhaps you have heard about Mr. Wildev's fortune? No, said Eustacia blankly. Well, he has come into a fortune of £11,000. Uncle died in Canada, just after hearing that all his family, whom he was sending home, had gone to the bottom in the Cassiopeia. So Wildev has come into everything, without in the least expecting it. Eustacia stood motionless a while. How long has he known of this? She asked. Well, it was known to him this morning early, for I knew it at 10 o'clock, when Charlie came back. Now, he is. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.